They're switching their crops to corn because of market demand, but corn can also be destructive to the environment. So Dashiell and Dole hope farmers enter the energy market in ways beyond crops. They're promoting other forms of fuel production, such as cellulosic ethanol. That fuel is produced from biomass such as wood chips or waste. And they've created a series of incentives, including a $100,000 interest-free loan for farmers to get involved. The plan goes one step further. It also sets up ways for the farmers to refine and distribute their biofuels. Senator Dole.
There's just another whole area where farmers can reap some income and not rely strictly on crop income. So it's just almost a revolution when you think about farm policy and what it means to the American farmer, or the community, the state, and to the American consumer.
Ben Lilliston with the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy says the Dashiell-Dole plan is well focused on conservation, on renewables, and enabling farmers rather than corporations to own their own farms.
This has been done really successfully on the state level. Minnesota here is kind of has the model for the country, where farmer-owned facilities received certain amounts of tax credits and gave them an advantage in the marketplace over ones that are owned by, you know, a big company. And the result has been Minnesota has really benefited from the bioeconomy, I think, at a much higher level than other states.
The former senators hope to sell their plan to the current Congress. Congress is looking at ways to shift U.S. farm policy, an examination that takes place every 5 years. And the political clout of the former senators from different parties will bode well on Capitol Hill. But many opposing forces do exist. The biggest area of contention will likely come down to finances. Dashiell and Dole say their proposal will save $4 billion taxpayer dollars. Senator Dashiell.
If we're going to have a farm bill this year, we have to be able to demonstrate that that farm bill can be written at reduced cost to the taxpayers.
Those cuts will happen by limiting subsidies paid to farmers and doing away with direct unconditional payments. Instead, they'll rely on the markets for renewable fuels to provide the farmers with profit. But some oppose. Tara Smith with the American Farm Bureau, a group that endorses large corporate farmers, says that the financial safety nets are important for farmers.
We think that the direct payments in particular help farmers meet sort of their day-to-day capital requirements on the farm and help support net farm income.
Chair of the House Agriculture Committee, Colin Peterson of Minnesota, has opposed doing away with direct payments, and many of the southern representatives oppose subsidy cuts. But many competing plans are out there, and the Congress will continue examining its options. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Immigrant rights advocates are participating in the fourth annual Migrant Trail Walk to highlight what they call a human rights crisis. According to one organization, more than 84 migrants have died in the Arizona corridor of the U.S.-Mexico border since October 2006, and the number is expected to increase during the hot summer months ahead. Amanda Schaugert joined the trail workers on their first day.
The walk takes place over 7 days and 75 miles and traverses the path some migrants take through the desert from Sasebe, Sonora, Mexico, to Tucson, Arizona. The caravan of walkers gathered in Tucson's Southside Presbyterian Church, home to the Sanctuary Movement, which provided relief for Central American refugees in the 1980s. A commencement ceremony took place at Nuestra Señora del Sagrado Corazón Church in Sasebe, Sonora, Mexico. Walkers carried 3 mock caskets to represent the men, women, and children who have perished in the desert. The procession wound through the dirt roads of Sasebe, past migrants and the businesses that catered to them. 60 walkers who plan to complete the entire migrant trail relinquished their IDs to group organizers as a further act of anonymity in solidarity with migrants. Walkers on the migrant trail want to call attention to what they say is a human rights crisis on the border. Reverend Del McCormick is with Borderlinks, a bi-national group that provides experiential tours of the border area.
If people came to the border and saw the numbers of military personnel, I don't know how many Border Patrol trucks we saw today, probably 20, 25, helicopters, I think they'd be appalled to know that we live that way. I think they'd be appalled to know the human violations, human rights violations that happen here on the border as well, not just for migrants, but for people who live on the border.
Melissa Rodas is a Phoenix area attorney who has walked the migrant trail all 4 years.
I feel that we're on this walk as a pilgrimage in solidarity with migrants, and in order to recognize the suffering that they go through, you know, often walking 5 and 6 days with a single gallon of water, and, you know, not having a map, not knowing their way, being exposed to, you know, criminals and bandits, and, you know, often 98% of the women that cross in the desert have been raped. I've worked with a lot of immigrant women in my law practice, and most all of them have been raped.
Over 4,000 migrants have died in the Arizona desert since the inception of Operation Gatekeeper in 1994, which began funneling border crossers away from major ports of entry into more treacherous terrain. The protest walkers seek to bear witness to this tragedy. They are well supplied with food prepared for them by community groups, and their gear is carried in support vehicles. Water will be provided to the group by Humane Borders, a faith-based organization that offers humanitarian assistance to border crossers by maintaining more than 70 emergency water stations on and near the U.S.-Mexico border. President of the group, Mark Townley, says the walk gives participants a taste of what it's like to make the trek.
It demonstrates kind of a little bit about what the migrants go through. Obviously, these people are much better supplied, and they have us taking water out to them every day. But it kind of shows sort of what they go through. This is a long, long hike across the desert. It's a long way. Even well supplied, it takes a lot out of these people.
The participants of the hike were invited by organizers and their allies. Walkers included college students from as far away as Washington and Colorado, a Mennonite pastor from Brownsville, Texas, as well as local border area activists and students. The first 2 miles of the walk on the U.S. side passed through Sasebe, Arizona. Here, many houses in the small town often have their yards fenced with concertina wire. Kat Rodriguez of Coalición de Derechos Humanos is one of the lead organizers of the migrant trail.
You know, a lot of people don't really know how they feel about a lot of the issues going on, immigration, border, reform, no reform, fence, no fence, wall, no wall. But sort of the human part of this, I think, connects a lot of people, and they realize this is about humans, this is about, you know, death, and this is about mortality and about the fact that, you know, we are responsible for each other, whether you like it or not.
Walkers set up camp in the Buenos Aires Wildlife Refuge for the first night. Later in the week, they will resume walking on the highway that leads into Tucson. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Amanda Schager in Tucson.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. I'm Brian Edwards Siegert, sitting in for Ada Bogado.
And that was Free Speech Radio News. You're tuned now to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and the show that you're actually 8 minutes into, and somebody put on the news a little bit late, but hey, there you have the news. Now maybe you'll get a little local news, although I need to hear it from you because I only get a small piece of the picture through one set of eyes. Those are my eyes. And this show concerns itself with civil rights, or what might pass for civil rights and civil wrongs in Santa Cruz. So have a phone nearby. Feel free to use it if you got something you want to say about these issues. 427-3772 is our call-in number, 427-FRSC. We are, in fact, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And my name is Robert Norris. These shows are archived on the Huff website. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, www.huffsantacruz.org, huffsantacruz.org. If you want to catch something you may have missed or, make a record of a slander for a future lawsuit or possibly critique what I or others have said on the show and come back at us with some new information or some new revelations, www.huffsantacruz.org. So, welcome to Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I'm expecting a call at 6:30 from Southern California, from a man who is standing his ground against police harassment down there on a piece of property where he's been living with in his vehicle. He'll be giving us more details about that if and when he calls in. Many of my callers have arranged to call in and then for some reason haven't done so, although a good portion have too, so I thank them, many of my guest callers, that is. So I'm not going to go into the issue further until I actually get the call from Tony, I think his name is, down in Southern California, Lancaster, I think it is. And right now, let's go directly to Pacific Avenue for some on-the-spot, well, these are recorded tapes, but they happened in Santa Cruz, and who knows, maybe you were nearby.
Look at this, if you're renting or rambling, make a desperate move or else they win, then you begin to see what you're doing to me. This MTV is not for free, so peace is killing me. So desperately I sing to thee of love, sure, but also rage and hate and pain and fear of self. I cannot keep these feelings on the shelf. I've tried, well, no, in fact, I've lied. Could be financial suicide, but I got too much pride inside to hide or slide. I'll do as I'll decide and let it ride until I've died. Oh, until I have by the side of catchy little tunes of history, minute cities, wanna bust their balloons. They need to burn all of these cities to ground. I have found that I will not mess around unless I play. Then, hey, I would go on all day when I say I had a prayer to pray. That's really all this was. When feeling stuck in need of luck, I don't believe in luck because the hood brings you back. I'm telling you, no, I would not tell you no lies. Well,
here at El Fresco's, or on the corner, listening to the music and singing of
James McDaniel.
And the drumming of
Bob.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, James. Free Radio will be hearing you, or I should say our listeners will be hearing you soon. It's a sunny Sunday afternoon, about 15 to 4 on the 27th of May.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Rare Rug of the Notorious and Barefoot Swami, who's fighting with poison oak and improper procedures by the police to dispense spiritual treasures to the masses. How's it going, Swami?
It is well. It is well. God bless you.
And, whoops. Slower speed. And so what's cooking, Swami? Anything downtown, any unusual behavior today that you wish to pass on as a spiritual lesson or, dare I say it, political caution to people?
Yeah. Be good. Be really, 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 really good. Because they're looking for everybody who isn't being good, by their definition. Seems to be really, really bad things happening today. I am aware of a young lady who is actually part of my congregation who's... I don't know exactly what their legal relationship is, but he is definitely her significant other, who is also a member of my congregation.
You're talking about Love and Cosmo?
Yes, yes.
Love is the woman, Cosmo is the man.
Yes.
And I understand that according to Love's account, I ran into her crying on the corner of Cathcart and Pacific about an hour ago. She said that she had her two children with her, one a babe in arms, another an infant in a maybe a two-year-old in a carriage, I don't know. She was saying that the police had come and assaulted her friend Cosmo and then added insult to injury by a few minutes later arresting him after letting him go for obstructing an officer. What have you got to contribute to this account?
It's a very, very sad thing when families are disturbed in this way. It's a very traumatic thing, and I would like to ask everybody to pray for Love and Cosmo and their kids and do whatever you can to help them. You can contact Robert to if you have any advice or aid that you can give them.
Yeah, if anybody saw the assault on Cosmo, if there was such an assault, that was what Love's account was. I would like to hear about it. Perhaps we can get some information from the downtown hosts who are always so ever-present and just waved at you, Swami.
Yes, several of the downtown hosts are on friendly terms with me. I don't know if they have any information about what was going on. They and the police tend to not really communicate together very well, even though they do occupy the same office space, per se. And then there's an attitude of strife between the downtown hosts and the police department, I've come to understand.
Really? And what's the essence of this? Why this division?
Well, I'm not exactly sure of what is going on from the police's point of view, but the downtown hosts, most of them, do not enjoy having to be watchdogs. That is, for most of them, it's the least favorite part of the job. They don't want to be the ones who have to call the police when something is going on. They don't like having that standing order. And it creates difficulty on their side. And on the police's side, I don't know what is going on, but I understand from a couple of the different downtown hosts that there is not a happy feeling between the two, a lack of communication in some form or another. I'm not sure exactly what it is.
I see. Now, I understand that I mentioned on the radio show the other day that you apparently were at the vortex of a series of tickets which, for some unfathomable reason, skipped past you.
I have no idea why this happened, except to say that you know, as soon as we mentioned that we are a church, the behavior of the police officers toward us changed noticeably.
Now, but you say certain people in the vicinity did get citations.
Pardon?
Certain people did get citations in the vicinity. What for?
I believe it was a violation of noise ordinance.
During the day?
Yes, during the day. There is actually a stipulation in the noise ordinance. I looked at it. During the day, there's certain types of noises are considered
right.
to be...
Unreasonably disturbing noises is the name of the ordinance, and it has to be of sufficient sound, duration, and intensity as to be intolerable to persons of ordinary sensitiveness, and it also has to be such as not conducted with a lawful activity.
Yeah, I'm pretty cognizant of all of these things.
Is this bike still going off?
You have a squeaky bird across the street,
squeaky
perhaps.
Bird across the street. Knowing the letter of the law, I was actually very curious because I, for one, could not hear the other people who were being
Maybe you don't have ordinary sensitivity. Maybe you have extraordinary sensitivity, and hence are willing to overlook loud and foul noises which disturb the downtown business community.
I do have the supernatural power of overlooking many things, yes. It's a developed ability.
And may you overlook and look over as well.
Well, I choose to look over all of us as well as I can. It's part of the job that God has given me.
And what's actually being talked about here are tickets given out apparently on Saturday or Sunday of 4 or 5 days ago for people playing music or playing a drum based upon the unreasonable noise statute, which I've discussed here before. The unreasonable noise statute is one of the so-called downtown ordinances from Chapter 9.36 of the Municipal Code, unreasonably disturbing noises. No person shall make, cause, suffer, or permit to be made any noises or sounds, A, which are unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to people of ordinary sensitiveness, or which are so harsh, so prolonged, or unnatural or unusual in their use, time, or place as to cause physical discomfort to any person, and B, which are not necessary in connection with an activity which is otherwise lawfully conducted. Which really is a hard standard for police or someone who is a citizen who doesn't like a particular guitar and the way it's going and so forth, or a drum. And I imagine that can be annoying to an older person who lives downtown to show as a standard, because it's this, of course, is only before 10 o'clock at night. After 10 o'clock at night, there is a different standard. After 10 o'clock at night, the standard becomes curfew offensive noise. No person shall, between the hours of 10 p.m. and 8 a.m., make, cause, suffer, or permit to be made any offensive noise which is made within 100 feet of any building or place regularly used for sleeping purposes, and which disturbs or would tend to disturb any person within hearing distance of such noise. Any noise, offensive noise, means any noise which is loud, boisterous, irritating, penetrating, or unusual, or that is unreasonably distracting in any other manner, such as likely to disturb people in the vicinity of such noise, and includes, but is not limited to, noise made by barking or howling dogs, by an individual alone, or by a group of people engaged in any business, meeting, gathering, game, dance, or amusement, or by any appliance, contrivance, dance, structure, device, structure, construction, ride, machine, implement, or instrument. So, again, to reemphasize, there's a very specific and rather low standard. As I say, you have to be very careful after 10 o'clock at night, because you have to be 100 feet away from a building. You can't disturb from a sleeping quarter area. And anything that would disturb is very specific. It's all itemized. Whereas before 10 o'clock at night, it's a much higher standard. And indeed, it has to meet two criteria. One is it has to be either, according to the law anyway, unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to persons of ordinary sensitiveness. That's not someone who's elderly and having trouble sleeping. That's not ordinary sensitiveness. Or it has to be so harsh or so prolonged or unnatural or unusual as to cause physical discomfort. And it has to be done not in pursuit of a lawful activity, which actually would seem to, you know, as long as playing the guitar downtown or playing the drums downtown is legal, it would seem that would make that pretty high volumes of noise legal. And indeed, this issue came up in the mid-90s when Councilmember Rotkin tried to pass a law that made drumming illegal. I think it was everywhere in town except its beach, or at least certainly illegal downtown. And it was one of those rare occasions where my old nemesis, Councilmember Kennedy, actually came forward with a good proposal, spurred to do so by activist and bubble blower Tom Noddy, as well as a bunch of musicians, drummers, and performers, to simply work out a kind of reasonable voluntary understandings. Of course, that was in the mid-90s, before the Ed Porter monitor of the hall, cop on the mall, cop in the classroom mentality passed the city council in 2002. The Porter-Riley ordinances of 2002 threw out what we used to have, the street performers' voluntary guidelines, where people sort of voluntarily responded to peer pressure, and there was always the unreasonable noise ordinance, which people could always use, but as you can see, it's a hard one to really enforce. What's happening now is the police are lying about the ordinance, in the sense that they are encouraging residents to believe, and the Downtown Association apparently has also actually given seminars on how to make complaints, if I understand correctly. Though I wasn't at a seminar, this is secondhand information. I think there was one on May 2nd in the attic. The employees of businesses went to get this seminar from police and hosts and downtown merchants and so forth, in how to drive away those damn hippies from in front of your store with a complaint, if you want. And what cops do, such as Officer Aldrich or Sergeant Flippo or other officers downtown, is they walk up and they say, well, you know, we've got a complaint about music that's too loud, and, you know, you're going to have to stop, as though that were the end of it. Whereas, in fact, what they should be doing is reading the ordinance to the person who's complaining and saying, look, although I don't favor this, you actually have to change the law, or maybe you can ask me to go down and ask these people, could they keep it quieter because, you know, you're having trouble sleeping. Not, I'm going to arrest you, but, or I'm going to cite you, because I can't really do that and reasonably win in court, because I walked by and I didn't find it violated the law. Otherwise, I would have given them a citation, because police officers are obliged to enforce the law. Even if there's no complaint, they are obliged to enforce the law, unless they're, you know, occupied with some other emergency business. So there's really very little case for people who are in, you know, of extraordinary sensitiveness shutting down music on the streets downtown. Now, this does have a flip side in that there are people who are, you know, may make unreasonable noise for loud periods of time, and they have to be dealt with. How are they dealt with? Well, usually I think peer pressure is pretty effective, and it's also a fact that the downtown, while it's, you know, the city council likes to talk about it as our living room and, you know, our our pride and joy. And, you know, we aren't a mall, but we have to be very careful about decorous behavior downtown. It's actually a public area, which means you can be pretty damn indecorous, provided you're not abusive to people in a way that's threatening or menacing. And this, of course, upsets a lot of merchants and council members and perhaps some police officers, because they want there to be a really more kind of mall-like, you know, like indoor Capitola Mall-like code of behavior. But I can tell you that's not what most of the community really wants. I've been to the Capitola Mall. You have to fill out a 5-page form if you want to give out a flyer there without getting hassled or arrested. I mean, you may think that, you know, you want a mellower, milder Walmart greeter coming in and taking care of that grubby-looking homeless person over there. But you might not if you really look at it, because it cuts out a lot of other First Amendment activity. And it's not a cut-and-dried issue. There are going to be people on both sides of this issue forever. But I clearly have a side of this issue which I'm pushing. And the reason I interrupted the tape to talk about it is because what's being done by these police officers is very selective and rather misleading, and I think actually involves misinformation, both to the people that are making the complaints and to the people that are receiving them. The people that are making complaints about unreasonable noise need to know that the ordinance doesn't allow them to shut down somebody because they find them too loud 2 blocks away, unless they are a person of ordinary sensitiveness and the activity is not being conducted with a lawful purpose, and it also is of such harshness or such well, again, the phrase is rather intense. The phrase is unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to persons of ordinary sensitiveness or so harsh, so prolonged, unnatural, or unusual in their use, time, or place as to cause physical discomfort to any person. I suppose really loud amplified drums or amplified sound might meet that point. That one could say that the catalyst meets that standard every night for people who live near it, or, you know, other bars. I mean, I guess that's become an issue with the E3 for the people living at 1010 Cathcart nearby. But some people have said, look, you know, you live downtown. It's like living in New York City. There is a standard of noise you have to put up with because it's a multi-use area. And I know I lived in New York City in the 70s, and I wasn't ordinary sensitiveness. I was hypersensitive in those days. Perhaps I still am, probably less so. And I was just, you know, I would call the police on people who were making noise next door. First, I would go and ask them to turn down whatever they were doing. And then if they didn't, I would simply, you know, make a complaint first to the management and then, you know, to the police if I had to, because I wanted to get my sleep. And, you know, anybody can always do that, and that actually is in and of itself a form of pressure. I mean, who wants to deal with the police? But the notion that police can shut arbitrarily musicians and music and drummers off the mall because it displeases people who are living 2 stories up and down the block is just not true. And the fact that the police are doing it is, if you look at the clear wording of this law, illegal, misleading, and unconstitutional insofar as it violates the First Amendment as well as, I guess, probably the first article of the California Constitution, although I don't have the California Constitution in my hand. They have a similar protection for freedom of speech, of which music is speech. Anyway, it's Free Radio Santa Cruz. You may have some ideas, and if you want to call in, 427-3772 is the number to call. And while I'm waiting for that flood of calls to come in, I'm going to play a little more from the Swami talking about how people to the right of him and the left of him got tickets for unreasonable noise, but he, I think he was playing some instrument, didn't, because he was on a religious rug, which, you know, I'm all for religious rugs, and I'm all for instruments of all kinds, but I'm not for this police crackdown, which, as I understand, is part of these spring sweeps, as they call it, to, you know, roust the vagabonds and the ragamuffins out of sight.
Look over, Red Rover, Red Rover.
Red Rover, Red Rover, send Robert all over.
We'll leave the Swami at this point.
Your
talking to Mad John Telfair, who's seated illegally on the planter in front of Rouge, or the Cooper House Mall, with his sign, "Need help due to illness and family." Why is it illegal? Well, in Santa Cruz, it's illegal to sit down on public property with a sign seeking change. Have you been arrested or harassed by any CSOs, hosts, or officers?
Not recently. I haven't been here this long, and I'm not going to stay here too long because it's kind of chilly out here. But whatever the case, I'm going to continue my work in one way or another to liberate people from the psychiatric system, which is part of the fascist state system. State psychiatry is a part of state oppression.
Now let me ask you, aren't you the same John Telfair and you're 78 years old now?
I'll be 78 in February.
Let's not exaggerate then. 77 years old. Aren't you the man who was told by Officer Malate or CSO Malate to stand up and hold your sign rather than sit down in his attempt to give you more exercise?
Yes, that was several years ago. Maybe he's mellowed out, or
he's no longer on the force.
Oh well, that explains
probably
it.
Retired with benefits.
That explains it. So no, I must admit I haven't been harassed lately, but I've only been here a short time. I just came back from North Carolina about a week or so ago, so I'm just getting my getting established back here again. And
I'd better take your phone number in case Homeland Security needs to contact you.
Okay. Should I give
Let me write it down, rather, unless you want to give it to the world.
No. It's an unlisted phone.
And you don't get to know it, all you listeners. So it's about 4:05. We're here at the corner of Cooper and Pacific. I'm with Valerie Christie. Valerie, you have a large crowd gathered here. And O'Neill's also has sort of a sidewalk display of all kinds of shirts and other clothing items that are extending out into the sidewalk, wetsuits and such. But there's a couple of breakdancers doing a lot of breakdance. The sidewalk is completely blocked going onto Cooper Street. But what does this remind you of? What comes to mind when you see this?
Reminds me of when I was down here seeing the brazen square dancing happening.
That was a week ago Friday, right?
Yeah, they practiced up on top of a layer of parking, and then they came out here and they blocked the whole sidewalk. They were in front of O'Neill's, and the cops told them to get away from the opening to it, and they dutifully, although they kind of played around laughing and complaining at the same time, they dutifully got 15 feet away, but still blocked the whole walkway. And, yeah, it looks just like that.
Although this time we have no police officers driving them away.
Well, we don't have any homeless, you know. We don't have any backpacks, and we don't have any dogs.
No, that's a good point. Now, see, well, there are some people seated illegally on the sidewalk in front of O'Neill's, I guess.
Yeah, but they've got wallets full of money, you know.
Well, that's a good point. Bring your money and your wallets with you if you come downtown.
And a point that I made about the Brazen Square Dancers, whose event was, I guess, a week or two ago, and, you know, they assembled on the top of the River Street parking garage, did a shindig, and moved their event down the Pacific Avenue to be in front of O'Neill's, to their credit. Apparently produced a lot of fun both for themselves and onlookers, and while in doing so ignored the traditional ordinances, actually ordinances that violate the community commons traditions, the downtown ordinances. In particular, and of course I raised the cry at the time, and I asked one of the organizers, Wes, and also known as Rico, to, you know, if it wouldn't this be an appropriate occasion for a nice police bust, because the downtown garages are not enterable unless you have a vehicle or bicycle, at least legally. You're not allowed to walk into a downtown garage. I know it sounds ridiculous. That's been the case since the law passed in, technically went into effect, I think, in July, though the cops said they weren't enforcing it until December, and they said at their most recent report of the Downtown Commission that they're only giving out one citation and 22 warnings. So the fact is, though, a preposterous law is in force, and people are ignoring it, a large group of people, and I think it would make the police look pretty ridiculous, or else clarify that they are selectively enforcing it, and it mainly against homeless and poor people, is my belief, although I don't have the statistics. It's really hard to get those kinds of statistics. But it's designed, I think, at least the kind of testimony we got at the Downtown Commission and then at the City Council on this Coonerty law, Ryan Coonerty, a Bookshop Santa Cruz owner, vice mayor, and get this, civil liberties attorney. I love it. Constitutional law teacher, I should say. I wouldn't call him a civil liberties attorney. Was the main person who pushed this law. Anyway, I was concerned that the Brazen Square Dancers were really a good opportunity for us to show how the police were either selectively using the law or ignoring it entirely. And to their credit, of course, if they do, but also it could be used to perhaps help other people get off. And I was told in no uncertain terms this would be very bad because it would subject the square dancers to inconvenience, it would bring in the cops, all this sort of thing, my goodness. And, you know, it's true, but the square dance was publicly announced and so forth. But in any case, I'd wanted to do this because I'd thought, well, there's a new massive increase being proposed in the downtown parking garage paranoia law, as I call it. They want to add every single parking lot in town. The police department does, and the public works department does, and some merchants do. Apparently the downtown association is interested in this, too, although I haven't really heard their official position. But I want to report, and I think I've already have reported, that the downtown commission last week voted down this stuff. That is to say, they're keeping the law in force that makes it illegal for poor people or people without vehicles or bicycles to walk into a garage, or for people with bicycles or vehicles to stay in that garage for more than 15 minutes. But they haven't extended it to any parking lot except, of course, the parking lot across from where homeless people get their meals at the Elm Street Mission and right next to the Catalyst and near the Cafe Pergolesi. So, while I was dissatisfied with how that went down and felt a little depressed that when I tried to post something about that on the free school feedback on the Brazen Square Dancing, I was censored, in essence. At least I'm able to rave about it here. So you heard it here again on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I believe we should all be supporting each other in these matters, and we should not be wincing when, you know, we should not want to have the privilege to do our square dancing and then go home and let the homeless people get rounded up and taken away and then insist that we have our event, you know, without any kind of disturbance and then just leave the rest of the people to suffer significantly more serious consequences, being driven out into the rain or out into the cold or out into the wind. Or there's just, you know, I guess the fact of being humiliated and having to face the police alone is a serious issue for a lot of people. More from the downtown and interviews on the street. Looks like our caller may not be calling in, but I'm keeping an eye on the line. You can call in, too, by the way. 427-3772 is the number, 427-FRSC. I'm Robert, and I await your calls.
To BB, who has a nameless analysis, or should we say account, about street events. What's been happening, BB?
Well, you name it. It's been coming down all right. We had two almost knockout drug outs, but it got settled. We told them to take it somewhere else.
These were what, homeless on homeless, housed on housed?
I believe they were both homeless. I don't know. I know one was. They call him Crazy Norman, Stormin' Norman, whatever you want to call him.
I knew a Stormin' Norman about 17 years ago, probably not the same one.
Oh, this one, he goes by the name of Ron also. Uh-huh. The cops know him quite well. He's been kicked out of everywhere.
So,
but he likes to agitate. He's like an agitating machine that don't stop.
So what? Where did this fight happen and why?
We don't know why. I guess maybe they didn't like each other from the word go.
Well, what about police action against innocent people who happen to be
well,
poor?
Well, let's glad that the police did not come because we were singing and it was a night we were singing and we did not want
Wednesday
any
night.
Problems.
Wednesday night?
That's Wednesday.
Now, what about other instances on the street of... Because I heard today there was some unfortunate things happening downtown.
Well, I don't know. I just got here.
Well, welcome to Pacific Avenue.
Well, we had a grand old time Friday night at the Firefly. Be there or be square, come.
Now, where is the Firefly?
Friday, one block from the wire wash. Used to be the old taxi cab. Come one, come all, you're all welcome. Bring an instrument if you can. If you can't, just join us. Say a poem, do a story, anything your heart desires.
What time?
7:30. Be there by 7.
Friday.
7:30, yes.
It's near
opening,
where...
a nice fire going.
Near where Front Street meets Pacific Avenue. Thank you. We've been talking with...
Phoebe.
Thank you, Phoebe.
You're welcome.
Keep Santa Cruz weird.
I will.
So, here we hear the unreasonable noise of various motors. Actually, it's not that unreasonable today. But we're talking with Craig Canada, and perhaps I'll interview this...
I'll talk to you.
Will he talk to me?
I think so.
Okay, well, all right, well, why don't you introduce me? Do you guys know each other? Anyway, Craig is telling me that this flautist got a strange ticket yesterday.
You know who Robert is?
We're talking with a man with a flute in his hand here what is this crossing? Locust and Pacific. And you have a...
I'll delineate it, man. Here's what really happened. I wasn't playing the flute, and I've been playing flute 52 years, Aretha Franklin, Lou Rawls. I rarely play guitar, and anybody who's seen me here for the last 2 months knows I never play guitar because you can't hear it. So I was kind of anxious and... looking forward to playing some guitar with some people. I went down to the next block, the 1200 block. I sat and I was playing, you know, ba-da-ba-da-ba, behind a kind of a cool singer. Everything was fine. And there were some conga drummers. A woman complained. I never saw her because I was doing a music thing, paying attention to the guy I was playing with. She complained. The policeman, a nice man named Mr. Aldridge, walked over to the conga drummers who we didn't invite or not invite. They just started playing with us because we were cooking and having a good time. And he said then, no more. But all I saw was his shoes and his back. He didn't ever say anything to me, so we kept playing. We just kept playing. 5 minutes later, he came back and gave us all a ticket. Now I've heard that it's going to be quite a bit of money. So, unfortunately, I'm not going to use my name because... I went to school here. I went to Cabrillo, class of 74.
And now you're a major criminal.
Now
a man with a flute. Or I should say...
Without ego or rancor, I can actually play.
Let's hear a little of that fluting, shall we?
Yeah, here comes some fluting. Now, watch this.
You know how to play the flute.
I know how to play the flute. So what I think of due diligence is this. Politicians should probably make minimum wage. That way they would figure out the things like what happened to me. Because now, although I was a trash collector for 7 years in San Lorenzo Valley, my son went to San Lorenzo Valley High for 2 years, and I went to Cabrillo, graduated. I used to own a business here. Now I'm a criminal, and I'm probably not coming back. And I'm probably not going to pay my ticket. And the reason is I'm not going to pay to play music. People give me money. You can look at my thumb. Hard as a rock. See that bump there?
Yeah, I do.
Damn.
You show me your...
52 years.
Bump.
52 years. So what I think, you know, in reality, I think that it was because of the Memorial Day weekend. They kind of wanted to clean stuff up. I think when they see this, and I'm pointing towards my sleeping bag, as soon as they see that, I have the feeling that they're...
adopting a mindset of some kind?
Yeah. Look how you're a very wise man. I think they're predisposed to think, because immediately, who has an ID and all these things. And, you know, I actually said nothing. The other three guys were very angry because they've been here for many years in a row. I was here last year and then 6 years, you know, on and on. They were kind of giving the cop, it's not personal grief, but they were going, we weren't doing anything. We're only playing music. It's 5:30 in the afternoon. Blah, blah, blah. And I didn't say anything. Hopefully letting him know that, you know, I said, I'm stopping. As soon as he said, there's a problem, I stop. But instead, I'm going to get some kind of a fine, and I'm actually not a criminal.
Now, let me ask you this. Were you playing unreasonably loud music? I take it you don't think you were.
No, not in the least. Even with the conga drummers.
How many people were gathered there?
Oh, well, four of us got tickets, but...
How many in the crowd?
Oh, 20 people.
And was there any reaction from the crowd when
they
you got this
ticket? They were angry at the policeman.
And did the police officer ever asked, is this unreasonable noise?
In other words, you find
after
this.
After the fact, as we were filling out the tickets, one woman, an activist kind of woman, she said, you know, you don't have to sign it. She was kind of what they call, like Lenny Bruce used to say, a site-specific woman. She goes, don't sign it. That forced him to put you in jail. And my thought was...
Put your hands behind your back and go to jail.
I want to go to jail.
Right.
But actually, the crowd was very much, very supportive.
Did you get any names or phone numbers from people in the crowd?
No, I think one guy wanted the four of us to go en masse on the same moment they're not open tomorrow. The government is off. It's Memorial Day,
right.
Monday.
Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm going to play a wedding. I won't be here. And I'm going to reiterate, it's unfortunate. But I'm not going to, they're going to have a warrant out for me.
A warrant. The man is under arrest. I'm going to have to call the police immediately and have you taken into custody.
Actually, I'm going to interject something.
Go ahead, Craig.
Yeah, when he told me this earlier, and then after he told me he got a ticket, and we chatted, he was playing. And Cynthia Matthews walked by.
That's a former mayor.
Yeah, and so yeah, he was playing very nicely, and I just pointed at him and said, he got a $92 ticket yesterday, and she's evidently very experienced at ignoring people. She just walked right on.
Big time.
Walked right on by.
We're going to have a look at the ticket. When this happened on Saturday afternoon?
Actually, it was Friday, but he circled Thursday. He was very professional. He really was professional. There's my card. That's why I'm not ready.
My card, yes, indeed. It actually says my card, so there you are. You know, it's interesting. Actually, Mr. Aldridge, I don't regard him as professional. I regard him as being...
oppressive.
Both oppressive and also unprofessional in this citation because...
excess noise.
Because we're looking at this. This is a violation of 9.36020. I'm going to show you the code section. And let's see, the time of day is...
5:30 on a Friday.
It's about 5:50. Actually, it's 4:50, about 5 o'clock.
Very crowded. There was many... We were like the least of the Christian man who's very zealous in his support of his religion, and I support that. He was yelling at the top of his lungs.
You should have told him that this flute activity was a religious activity.
And it is. Right. It actually is.
Well, there you are.
And actually, it's ill-defined sometimes. You know, it doesn't have to involve a deity. It could involve massive preparation and things like which I've done.
Well, let me give you first of all, let me point out to you what the code section that talks about unreasonable noise is actually rather permissive, and it's not really one which allows for simply a person to complain and you have to move or get a citation.
Right.
That's a decision by the officer. So if you choose to remain here and you choose to fight the citation or you choose to continue playing and you get again accosted by Officer Aldridge, who's done this before with other musicians, the first question I would ask him is, do you find this to be unreasonable noise?
Someone did ask him that, and his answer was circumspect but real. He said, you know, I don't hear it as harshly as she does, because he went to her apartment.
Right.
And then originally came down and told the drummers to stop, and they stopped. Then when he went back up, and then...
The problem here is he told the drummers to stop, and he sanctioned you, even though you were willing to stop, with a serious citation, which interferes with our ability to hear your music and your ability to play music for us.
Yeah.
The point is, but even more important than that, an individual making a complaint does not have a right to stop you from playing unless you are engaging in unreasonable noise. Now, what is unreasonable noise? Well, we look here at the code section, and it's right here. It's called unreasonably disturbing noises.
Yeah.
No person shall make, cause, suffer, or permit to make any noises or sounds which are unreasonably disturbing.
Pull out your notebooks, folks. I know we're repeating this, but it bears repeating.
Sensitiveness, or which are so harsh or so prolonged or unnatural or unusual in their use, time, or place as to cause physical discomfort to any person, and this is the second condition must be met, which are not necessary in connection with an activity which is otherwise lawfully conducted.
Right.
Now, if you read this section, it's reasonable. I wouldn't even argue with the police officer. I'd say, you might just show in the code section and say, is it your opinion, without even showing in the code section, do you think I'm making unreasonable noise? Now, if he says, as he did, well, not really, but the other person's more sensitive.
Yes, that's what he thought.
Then what you say to him is, well, you know, you should go to this person and tell them that they can make out a citation if they want.
But if they do, citizen's arrest, but if they do, I will make a citizen's arrest of this person for, quote, what I call a false police report. Because everybody in this crowd does not think it's unreasonable.
No.
And the fact that somebody further away does is not a basis for a legitimate complaint to the police. Hence, he or she is making a false report. And you are doing a disservice. And the point here is that what's going on here really is...
And that what's missing from what I just said is that the officer really should be informing the complaining person that for her to be really making a claim around this law, it has to be so harsh or so prolonged as to be unreasonable of persons of ordinary sensibilities and not conducted with a lawful activity. So if she then wants to make out the citizen's arrest in spite of that, in spite of the fact that the officer himself obviously didn't find it unreasonable or he would have made out the citation before she did, then she's making a false police report because obviously it's not. I suppose she can claim it is and claim that she sincerely or he sincerely believed it was, and I suppose then it wouldn't be a false police report. But an individual can still claim that the individual is making, if somebody accuses you of trespass or of engaging in behavior on the sidewalk you didn't engage in, and they're making false claims, and they're doing that to a police officer, that's a false police report. So I guess it's, in a way it's a certain twilight zone here. But you can yourself, you can state, look, I believe this is a false interpretation of what's going on, and I think it's a false police report, and I'm going to suggest that I wish to complain and file a charge against this offending party, against this complaining party, for making a false police report, particularly if you took it from her and you took it seriously, because you know what the code section says, Officer Aldrich. You know that it says that unreasonably disturbing noises is not what someone in a hotel room a block away and two blocks and two floors up doesn't like. And it's a rather different standard, and your responsibility is to advise her or him of that. And then you also have the opportunity to say, look, if you want to make a complaint, take it to the DA, or I'll make a report, but I'm not going to tell this person that I'm going to arrest them because I don't think there's probable cause. If you think there's probable cause, then you have to sign the citation yourself, and you got to be aware there's a risk of the person saying, well, you're making a false report here because obviously it's not unreasonable noise and it's being conducted lawfully, so you're just using the police as a private security force to harass somebody on the mall who you don't want there because you don't like what they're doing. You find it, disturbing to you in some way, and that's fine. A lot of things are disturbing to a lot of us. I find a lot of stores very disturbing, but I don't have the right to remove them. I find a lot of the military very disturbing, but that's another story. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. If you're being disturbed by this broadcast, I urge you to call in and fight back with a little free speech of your own, 427-3772.
The Downtown Association is holding seminars on how to get rid of street performers and give citations to people that are engaging in behavior of this kind.
Yeah, that's the truth. Several people have already now said that to me. You know, I believe I've been in several cities now where they have to. I have a permit from the city of Tempe that's good for another 3 years. It was like $41 or something. So I was sanctioned because they tried to. There used to be a thing here in Santa Cruz, this is how old I am, when I went to Cabrillo in 1974, they had the undesirable transient element and what to do about it. So UTEs. Mm-hmm. And eventually, all the whole city council bought UTE t-shirts. They had to get on one side or the other. It's kind of sad that it was either us and them, because I believe the far left creates the far right, and the far right creates the far left. You know, Hitler's Germany, 1930, a lot of anarchists, so they decided they wanted more power. And then in communist Russia, Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, too much state, so then they said, we want freedom. So what happened here in Santa Cruz was really nice. I liked it. The whole council put on their UTE t-shirts saying, okay, we're not going to do that. Then 14 years later, 15, when I came back at one point from Hawaii, no more sleeping anywhere,
Right, 1978, the sleeping
bill. The sleeping bill or whatever it was. And so now it's
devolved into me being a criminal. So unfortunately,
well, you look like a pretty suspicious character to me in that actually, in that outfit. I mean, look at that, and look at this question. What is this black thing? It's a case of some kind, something subversive.
Just in case.
Just in case. That's of course your flute case. We've been talking with an anonymous individual, but you want to give us a colorful pseudonym?
Oh, no. Here's what I really think. I think that mild depression can lead to more dangerous things. And I'm an apolitical dude, and I can tell you're a good political person. I think all politicians should make minimum wage. And it's in the end result...
What's up, minimum wage?
Yeah.
Maybe, deport them to Mexico.
Well, it'd make due diligence a lot easier. I think this, that, you know... The fact that I'd even have to use a pseudonym is mildly upsetting, although I'm a nice guy. And,
you
know,
I don't think you do have to use a pseudonym, but I think if you are concerned that you should protect yourself. So
yeah,
I mean, I think actually by using your name, you're saying I'm not ashamed of what I did. And I don't think you are, but I think, you know, it's a way of saying that, and it's a way of saying...
That's why I showed you the ticket.
Yes,
I wanted
you did.
To show
yes, you did.
Personal
right.
Physical ticket, because it actually did happen just like I described it. I really feel this, that when you try, when they cleaned up Berkeley, because people were defecating and urinating in the jewelry store entranceways.
Do we have public restrooms in Berkeley? I don't know
how that happened.
We have, yeah.
Well, many street folk came here, and that might have been 1997 or something. Then it did seem like it could be a problem, but now there's public restrooms, and I'm not going to say which store, but
Bookshop Santa Cruz.
There's a restroom in there, and
but there's no 24-hour restrooms in Santa Cruz, for instance.
No. And so one of the things that happens is mild depression, meaning if you've got to take a leak or a number two, suddenly you're kind of like slowly being dealt with.
Time.
Yeah,
for sure.
If we got deep on the political angle, Hitler just made it uncomfortable for Jewish people. And I could say this, the last time that Jewish people... motorcycle. Statement on this one will be the last time Jewish folks listened to a bush, they spent 40 years in the desert.
Thank you, Mr. Flautist.
You're cool. I appreciate it, man.
I appreciate your flouting.
You know, it made me feel bad, and you know, now I feel a little better.
Good. Keep it up. And get. Well, we're talking to Craig Canada. Craig, you say we know you're going to court for 4 sleeping band tickets, and you say 2 more are on the way.
Well, yeah, I have 2. I've got to do something. I have to answer. I got one last week, and I think one the week or 2 before that.
And what was the most recent encounter you had with the sleep patrol?
Oh, I can't recall, actually. Several days ago.
Okay. But you weren't given an alternate place to sleep, I take it?
No, they just want me to go somewhere else, anywhere else. They don't care.
Did they state there had been a complaint?
Actually, no. That was one of the first things I asked is, did someone complain? And at first he said no. And then toward the end of my being detained while they checked my identification and everything, he said that there had been a complaint.
Who was the officer, you know?
I don't recall his name.
And the amount of time involved in the ID check?
It was probably about half an hour longer.
Time of the harassment?
I think it was just before 6.
6 a.m.?
Yeah, and it could have been Friday morning.
Location of harassment?
I was over at Santa Cruz Title Company.
All right, well... at least you're keeping the police officers busy early in the morning.
It's sweeps week. They don't want any tourists to stumble over any bums at 5:30 in the morning.
Thank you, Craig Canada.
Oh, you're welcome.
And in regards to that, Craig does go to court to trial tomorrow, not on that ticket or the previous ticket, which takes about a month to clear the infraction calendar. It's a violation of the law in Santa Cruz if you sleep after 11 o'clock until 8:30 in the morning on any public property, or even if you're in your vehicle legally parked. You also are not allowed to cover up with a blanket outside, even if you're not asleep. And if you are so bold as to go into the Poganip to set up a tent, let's say against the rain, and this is in a city that has shelter tonight for 40 people, emergency drop-in shelter for only 40 of the 1,500 to 2,000 homeless, then you can face a citation any time of the day or night, not just between 11 o'clock at night and 8:30 in the morning, which is the black period for the sleeping ban and the blanket ban. Anyway, Craig has gotten 4 sleeping ban tickets, and he is going to be going to trial 1:30 tomorrow, Friday, the June 1st, in Department 1. That's the first court as you walk in to the flat-level building, get past the or stripping you down for searches for metal, you know, that sort of thing. Ours is the only court system that I know of that doesn't provide a locker for you to put your stuff in. If they take some item from you, they don't tag it and then let you take it out when you, you know, get claim it when you leave. But in fact, you are supposed to provide your own facilities, not to bring it. So if you have a small pocket knife, or as Craig has had, medical marijuana, which he has a legal right to have, and he has the legal documentation for it. For some reason, they don't allow that kind of thing in the court area. I don't know why that would, how that would menace the judges is not clear to me. but in any case, there's no place for you to put it. You have to go hide it behind a bush. If you happen to have a vehicle, and put it in a car. Or if you have a friend, you know, who works in the next building. But for people who are homeless, of course, they can't do much of anything. And Craig has this huge backpack that he carries around in his back and wheels around, actually, with him. And he... at one point, he was simply not allowed through the metal detector. They said, you have too much stuff in here that, you know, we don't want in here. And I think they were referring to forks and spoons. I'm not quite sure, but essentially innocuous items. But, you know, we are a security state here, a national security state, and this predates 9/11. And, it, you know, it's part of this ramped-up drug war police mentality that we're suffering under here in Santa Cruz, and we have to beat back, and that we aren't yet successfully doing, but hopefully someday we will. Anyway, Craig goes to trial 1:30 tomorrow in Department 1, which is before Judge Deneen Guy. That's her name. First name Deneen, last name Guy, G-U-Y. And it'll probably be the first sleeping ban trial before her. And I understand Kate Wells is filing a motion that will request that he be appointed an attorney because the judge has illegally denied him the right to a jury trial on another charge he's also been charged with, which is failure to appear, because the very day that he wanted to get through the metal detector and appear in court, they wouldn't let him in, so he didn't get to court, so they gave him a failure to appear. And it's the case, if you look in the law books, that failure to appear is not an infraction, which is the most minor sort of crime, such as the sleeping ban is minor in some respects, because you can't directly be sent to jail, but you can be fined up to $1,000, although the usual fine is, I guess the bail is $90, and it's usually more than that. $90 is what they're supposed to fine you in a sleeping ban case, or no more than 8 hours of community service, but in fact they're not very fastidious about that. But if you're charged with a misdemeanor, you can go to jail for 6 months, sometimes a year, and you can also be charged up to $1,000 for that. And that is, you're allowed a public defender. In fact, they're required to appoint a public defender for you. And Craig asked for that and said he did not give his permission to have this misdemeanor lowered to an infraction so the state would have the convenience of giving him of denying him a jury trial. You're not allowed a jury trial in these infraction cases, only if it's a misdemeanor or a felony. And also, the state would not have to appoint a public defender if it's just an infraction and not a misdemeanor or a felony. So he's going to be fighting that. He's going to bring the motion in himself. And we'll see what happens. Come on down, Department 1, 1:30 tomorrow, and be a supporter for the rights of poor people not to be harassed with this kind of nonsense. I mean, it's even more baroque and bizarre and Byzantine and peculiar because, as I've said repeatedly on this show, Los Angeles, a city of millions of people, and a much more conservative city in many respects. Although I suppose there are all more activist liberal sides to Los Angeles as well. But that city has tried to suppress homeless people from sleeping at night and been told in no uncertain terms by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in the Jones decision it can't do that. That it has to allow an area for people to sleep. And they've declared the Skid Row area, which is I don't know how many square blocks in downtown Los Angeles, 50 square blocks, I think it is, between the hours of, I think it's 9 and 6:30, do have to allow the homeless to sleep legally without being arrested for violating the so-called sit-lie-sleep law. And the same settlement was reached in San Diego because of the Los Angeles decision, and the same that ruling also prompted a change of the law in Richmond, and Oakland and Fresno have declared they're going to, at least Fresno mayor has declared he'll set up a homeless encampment and has provided dumpsters and porta potties to the homeless encampments that are already set up, or at least one of them. And City of Oakland has reported out their group PATH, which is a part of a city agency, is looking for ways to set up homeless encampments or is considering that. But the main point is that Los Angeles and San Diego have said, been told by the Ninth Circuit Court, which is a federal court that covers Santa Cruz as well as Los Angeles and San Diego, you can't arrest people for sleeping at night. And what's happening here in Santa Cruz is that Barrasoni, the city attorney, is ignoring this. So Craig Canada may be mentioning this tomorrow in court and saying to Judge Deneen Guy, you know, this is an unconstitutional law. I haven't got the wherewithal to really argue it myself, but it is. And I would like to have an attorney appointed to allow me to use, you know, to bring up these decisions, to and also to consider the necessity defense, and also to defend myself against this misdemeanor failure to appear. While sleeping is itself an infraction crime in Santa Cruz, and so does not require the court to appoint a public defender or have a jury trial, it is a complicated defense to make if you want to say that you are doing the crime because you have no other option, which is the necessity defense. And that's also, I think, going to be part of the motion that Attorney Kate Wells is going to present, or he will present after she's written it up. We're having really a lot of trouble getting attorneys to go into court. They are just too busy, or they're not getting paid, and you know they have other things that they feel they need to do. And so we need attorneys. If anybody out there has any legal experience, paralegal experience, has any friends who are attorneys, get in touch with Huff, 423-4833. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and appreciate your help, or at least, you know, for just to be, maybe we can kick around the issue, because we're also considering a sleeping ban lawsuit, a suit that would formally extend the Los Angeles Jones decision that you can't arrest people for sleeping outside when there's no legal place for people to go generally. That's a violation of the Eighth Amendment against cruel and unusual punishment. Extend that decision to Santa Cruz. And if you want to see your own injustice system at work, come on into Deneen Guy's court tomorrow at 1:30 and have a gander. So there. Back to the streets and more street interviews.
We have Officer Sims from the CSO filling out a form of some kind as he talks to Swami here. It's 15 to 5 in front of the Coffee Roasting Company.
A-M-R-I. Yeah.
And your first name?
My title is Swami. Okay. S-W-A-M-A or M-I.
Your date of birth?
5664.
We have three police officers here. Officer Hoppy among them. Valerie Christie is on the blanket. And Lalani is also here with a guitar. Swami has his guitar.
And actually, I believe that's Valerie Promise. There are several Valeries around. There's Valerie Corral, Valerie Promise, Valerie Chris. We've got Valeries galore in Santa Cruz. Valerie Promise is a musician, and as is Valerie Christie. Valerie Corral, of course, is an activist who helped found WAM, Women and Men Medical Marijuana Collective.
He's donning it again.
I mean, he was looking for trouble. Why mess with a peaceful blanket?
He was looking to get a bed.
That's my opinion.
Oh, yeah, I have a butterfly.
But he had four girls.
He told me his name. What's happening there, Valerie?
We reported an incident with noise. A motorcyclist came along and actually wasn't with noise. He was expecting us to not disturb a boundary. He had a sensor here, and every time we moved within a certain area, it's at the sensor off, so we could, you know, sit quietly on the pillow in the middle. But the, you know, this area here, you might.
I remember I was there actually.
Right, and I thought there was a boundary I couldn't maintain, having ADD as I do. But you know, then to expect other people to expect me to keep track of all the other people who are coming by, you know, it's really a physical impossibility, even if I were sympathetic, which I'm not. So then, anyway, Leilani came along.
And what Valerie Promise is talking about is, you may have remembered in the previous interview with Swami, there was a little bit chirp, chirp, occasionally came into the interview. You may not remember it, but that was an alarm on the motorcycle bike, a sensor that apparently reacted when people walked near the bike. It went chirp, chirp. And so this was a complaint about chirping. And, well, Valerie Promise will explain it more, but that was the situation. The Valerie Promise and Swami have a kind of a spiritual rug and food distribution service and sort of spiritual counseling church that they have, kind of church on a rug, so to speak, on the sidewalk, right in front of or near the book, not the bookshop, Santa Cruz, the coffee roasting company across from Starbucks. And it's been there for some time. And it was originally done by Swami for many months, and then Valerie Promise got involved. And they have had numerous projects. They're trying to reinstitute the Monday morning meal. The Monday evening meal that Tenderfoot Tim had until he recently had some physical problems and had to abandon. But in any case, in this situation, there were three police officers there actually taking a complaint from folks who are homeless. Valerie and Swami are currently homeless and yet trying to engage in serving food and spiritual sustenance. And they're having problems with this motorcycle, motorcyclist with the sensor, and this is what this is all about. It's an unusual situation in that normally, often police are less sympathetic to homeless people filing complaints than they are to, let's say, established middle class residential or merchant people, where residential people have an actual fixed home.
Tried to not set off the alarm, but she couldn't help it. She.
Lonnie's woman to your left with a. Yeah. Or your right, right. With a guitar.
That's right. And she couldn't help it. And finally it just went off. And she's asking me, what do you do? And I said, I don't know. That's between you and him. I was not willing to take responsibility for his bike or for her. I left it up to her and him to decide how to handle it. So then he got angry and decided he was going to rev up the bike and say, because he had to have it turned on, I guess. The choice was to have it turned on, the engine on or the, you know, alarm on. It didn't seem like it was possible. Even though he was sitting right here at the coffee roasting, it was not possible for him to park the bike with the alarm off, evidently. So anyway, then he's revving up the engine. He and Leilani are exchanging angry words, and I didn't hear the words. I think he said, well, you know, just deal with it or pray for me or whatever you're going to do. So I said, okay, well, I'll deal with it. I'll call the police because, you know, these motorcycles, the noise is a nuisance, and compared to what a street musicians put out, you know, we don't, we get way more of our proportion of complaints. So I don't mind putting a complaint in about a motorcyclist.
Response to that?
He got angry and throttled it up even higher and tore off with his three friends. Leilani said he threatened to beat the shit out of, or he said he would beat the shit out of us if we were guys or something like that. So I don't know. I didn't hear the words.
Now, did you catch a license plate number?
Yes, I did. 17E9001.
What was the license number of the lead motorcycle?
That was the only person. He was the only person who was making a fuss. He had two companions, but I didn't hear them or see them saying anything.
The chirping motorcycle.
Chirping motorcyclist, yes.
Well, at least it didn't bark, right?
Well, it's all the same, you know, whether it chirps or, you know, emits obnoxious noise and gas, it's still a nuisance that, you know, it's one person's ego. You know, they feel like they get to take up the whole space. You know, not only
I get to take up the whole space.
Yes,
okay.
Not only do they get to take up the space their body's in, the space their motorcycle is in, they get to take up all the space around the motorcycle that doesn't, you know, have any visual stuff in it to give you a clue that it's occupied.
So, how long did it take the officers to respond to your call?
I was told by the dispatcher it would take a long time, and I turned around after the motorcyclist left, and there they were across the street. So I said, hey, I just put in a complaint. You ready to listen? And they were.
Oh, excellent. So
they've been very polite and courteous so far as I've observed and helpful.
Yes, those officers, Peabody and Sims, and of course,
they seem to be concerned as to whether there was really a threat and whether something needed to be done precautionarily. I don't know that, but they seem to be intent on determining that.
Well, I know I talked to to Swami here earlier today, and he was telling me that, gosh, yesterday or the day before, there were police issuing citations to your right and left, but ignoring the sacred Swami blanket.
I don't really understand that. All I heard was that somebody complained about a drum, and we were drumming as well as those guys, but those guys down the street got given tickets. I volunteered to take a ticket, too, but instead they said you're subject to this display device ordinance if you don't pack it up in an hour. You know, then we have to take other action. They didn't call us on the noise complaint at all.
Did you pack it up and move within the hour?
Baba did. We were ready to leave anyway. And ready to make an issue of it because I didn't know if that involved any kind of arrest, and I was not willing to take that step yesterday.
So they got the Swami blanket to move on threat of the move-along law yesterday, eh, Valerie?
Well, it was a combination of things.
I would like to point out that on that particular day, I was not the official of the church in charge. I was actually convalescing, and it was the director of the church herself who was in charge that day.
All right, we're out of here. Thanks for your cooperation.
I do have the statement to make about this. That is
relevant. Okay. Well, they're the ones that are taking care of that.
No, it wasn't bothering me.
Excuse me, I need to.
Certainly.
Sorry.
All right, that's okay, like I said.
Any comments for Free Radio on this incident?
I think it sucks that you can't sit with peaceful people and have a moment of peace without something getting in your way or telling you you're in the way. Is there a square cubic 12 inches I can take up without being harassed?
Well, it's important to have money and a position.
12 cubic inches.
Well, and a nice dress.
You know, I mean, understand, you're on the public sidewalk, which belongs to the merchants.
The public, correct? Is my cigarette bothering you?
No, not at all.
I believe in respecting each other's boundaries, and he wasn't respecting mine, or hers, or his own. You know, he just came and decided, hey, guess what? I've been here longer than you. I'm older and meaner, and I have more friends than you, and my motorcycle is bigger than your guitar.
Well put, Lilani. Anything you wish to add? How are the police officers treating you?
They're very kind, and they're being considerate. And asking the right questions and making me feel somewhat safe. How refreshing.
How unusual for the Santa Cruz Police Department downtown.
Sweet. I like the cops here.
Thank you. We're talking with
4-Hour Ron, R-A-W-N.
And R-A-W-N, what's happening?
I got thrown in jail for something weird from 7 in the morning till 10:30 in the morning. And then I said the hot dogs at Dennis's are better than your lunch, so they let me go.
Dennis's?
Pizza hummus here, hot dogs.
Oh, right, right.
It's better there. They say, well, they'll let you go. You don't want lunch? I go, no, they let me go.
How was Dennis's, Dennis Great. Potter's meal today?
Oh, that's at the town as bar. Usual, as usual, hot dogs.
How many people showed up?
Too many.
Too
can't
many.
Handle them all.
And this is a meal that happens every Sunday at the town clock, serving 60 to 100 people. Dennis Adams, the Potter's Hand Meal, which I've never been to because I'm always sitting in the studio serving out my spiritual political num-nums for all you folks out there. This show returns every Sunday, 9:30 to 1, and I invite you to come back for a longer fix.
And was there any reports of citations, arrests, or harassment by police?
Well,
you know?
I just got back with the big one. I didn't like, so I didn't pay attention. I just left with the food.
You're showing me a sheath of tickets. How many of these?
I can't get my property till Tuesday because it's holiday.
What property?
New York Times, $5 there in it. And
what property was taken?
My bag, and I can't get it until Tuesday.
And what was the charge?
I forget. Oh, cussing out loud. Something minority.
What did you say, sir?
I can't say it. It's
oh, dear.
It might hurt somebody's feelings.
The N-word?
No.
The H-word?
No. It was a thing about Linda Ronstadt and that bunch.
The Y-yuppie word?
No. It was like, you know, Linda Ronstadt lived with the governor and your mama and all that because he called me a motherfucking bitch, as whore. He's a Mexican.
No.
Security cop. From hell.
So... let me see if I understand this properly. What time of day was it?
7 in the morning.
And
on the way to get a coffee down here.
At the coffee roasting company?
Yeah. And then at 7 a.m., I'm right across the... And here comes the security cop.
And what does he say?
Something about my mama. Because I said something about his.
So
if I was alone running in Mexico,
were you
in
on
South,
the street? Were you in a sleeping
in the middle of the street. Walked in to get a cup of coffee.
And so the security guard.
I bumped it against that girl that was scooping up the spreading asthmatic junk all over your asthmatic. You'd have attack, you know.
Don't understand.
There's a big old Oriental girl. There's like a football player. There's a woman. She had that mask on. She said, if I had asthma, I'd, you know. And he goes, fuck you, bitch. I said, fuck your mama. And then they said, I hit her with a backpack. And I bumped up against her.
Did you hit her with a backpack?
I tapped her with it because she ran on my foot.
She had a bike, a bicycle?
No, a sucker thing to suck up all the dust and spread it all over. I said, if you're asthmatic, you die.
She was a city employee?
I guess. Yeah, every time I go in there to warm my hands up, she turns off the heater.
Did a police officer witness?
Every time I go in there to warm my hands up, but she's working, she switches off the heater.
Did a police officer witness?
No, security guard did.
And he took the initiative, or she took the initiative at filing?
Well, the Oriental agent and the Mexican, I'm the white guy. End of story.
I see. Okay, well, thank you for the racial analysis.
Reversal on discrimination. Like when the black guy goes, did you bump up against my daughter, 14, try to rape her, my boy? No.
Thank you.
We're talking with Edward.
And Edward, you say you got a third ticket this week?
Yeah, for sleeping.
Where were you sleeping?
Behind the Veterans Hall.
And were there others with you?
No.
And how did this sleeping ticket come to be? What went down?
Oh, the officer was going down the sidewalk, and where the railing is on the back side of the building, or the back door.
Hang on just a second. Let me slow down this tape. Go ahead.
Somehow the officer spotted me when he was walking down the sidewalk and came up to the parking lot. Told me about trespassing, but he didn't write it that way. So he gave me the thing about for sleeping, and it said if I came back in 48 hours, if he spotted me there 48 hours, I'd go to jail for trespassing. But that's not what's on the ticket.
So did he say there'd been a complaint?
He said the people for the Veterans Hall said they have to have them to make sure that everything's secured.
Mm-hmm. And did he think you were violating their security? Did he say that you were a menace? Were you threatening to break in? Did he say anything? Carrying burglary tools, perhaps?
No, I just told him he's in violation of my civil rights. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to hear that.
What time of the day was it?
Oh, this was early in the morning. That's how they do. They rise you up first thing in the morning.
You remember what time?
Between 5 and 6.
And this is your third sleeping ticket?
Yeah.
And you got two other tickets. Where did you get those tickets, if you wish to divulge?
I think it's the same place in front of the Veterans Hall.
Same security guard, or?
No, the legal-ass cops, legal-ass crooks.
And what did they have similar comments to you? What did they tell you? Did they give you another place to go in any of these tickets?
Oh, they know it all. I don't know nothing.
Well, again, my advice for those who get sleeping band tickets is to wait about a month, because that takes them that long to appear on the computer. Go to the basement of the county building and disqualify the referee under 170.6 CCP, which means you go to the window of the court building and the building in the basement, the window in the basement, and you say, I wish to have this case moved into another court. Then the referee's court, that's referee basket, you don't want her. And it goes upstairs to one of the judges, who is probably equally bad, but somewhat better. So then you call Huff, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we all chat about it at the Huff meeting every Wednesday between 9:30 and 11:30 in the basement of the county building in a little cafe down there.
Oh, the next time I get a sleeping ticket, I'm not signing my name on the line. I'm going to sign somebody else's name, Stuart B. McKinney Act of 1987.
Understandable protest. Remember, that might be construed as giving false information to a police officer, which, of course, is punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine, if not more.
No, but the reason why I was signed the Stuart B. McKinney Homeless Act, because, therefore, they can't tell me I made a promise.
Right, but then, of course,
it's a federal law. It's not against the law to be homeless. That's where that word comes from.
I understand, but what they can do if you don't give your name and ID, although they're doing so illegally, is they can take you into custody and hold you until such time as they have been able to ask or get a promise to appear from you or to hold you until arraignment.
I would not make no promises I can't keep.
Hear, hear. We've been talking with
Edward.
Thank you, Edward. A man who is still occasionally selling the latest issue of Street Spirit, the May issue with the Robert Whittaker interviews. Check him out downtown on Pacific Avenue. Right, Edward?
And give him the location where, just out of curiosity.
You do that.
anywhere along Pacific Ave. How about that? Sum it all up, because it could change.
All right, and we're talking about a man with a white cap and a blue coat, and he's got a, what do we call this thing, kind of a...
Travel cart.
Travel cart. Thank you, Ed.
Not a problem.
We're talking to the pink lady on her pink bike. Your name, madam?
Not to be confused with the pink guy with the pink umbrella.
Correct.
Oh, it's me, Mrs. B. Hey.
Any reports?
Filed appeal against... I won against CPS.
How did that happen?
I didn't lose my educational rights, and I stopped them from giving my kids psychotropics.
Here, very, very impertinent, because today we had a, not just impertinent, but pertinent, because today we had that very subject on free radio, which, in honor of your victory, I present you with this free copy of Street Spirit, Psychiatric Drugs.
But, thank you.
And abuse in the human condition.
Yeah, it's just that with the conflicting diagnosis that his family's had, I'm concerned with counteractive drugs that could cause suicidal tendencies in children going through trauma. And since we're having trauma in our lives due to CPS, I didn't want him messing around with drugs in his head right at this point.
You're trying to get two of your children back.
Yeah.
Third died.
Yeah.
And you're outside. You're houseless.
Yeah.
And your partner has been jailed away, and has he been released?
Yeah, he's been out. I've been to jail since then.
Well, for what?
An old resisting arrest and interfering in the duty of a police officer.
And did you strike the officer with your baton?
No, I tried to stop him from grabbing someone else.
And how did you do that? By seizing him around the neck and throttling him?
No, I put my arm up against his chest to try to slow his forward movement.
An erotic advance of some kind to distract the officer?
Well, it was a large, strapping sheriff's deputy, you know.
I do.
I was lonely at that point, but no longer.
Not that lonely, probably. All right, well, I will attempt to harass you no further with my innuendos. Anything else from the streets?
Everybody got run out. Seeley's been gangs of fun. And
Officer Eric Seeley, homeless resource officer?
Oh, yeah. And
how has he been loads of fun? Well, what do you mean? That sounds like a sarcastic comment.
Well, he's taken two or three of my friends to jail in the last 2 weeks, so...
Well, criminals, no doubt.
Oh, definitely.
What were they jailed for?
One was drug charge. One was a bunch of warrants, stupid stuff. And I think the other one was, what did they go to public for? It wasn't drunk in public. But something to that effect.
Okay. I want to tell you that on the same tip as the last thing I was talking about, the guy who works in the coffee shop just told me they harassed him for he was sitting on something taking a smoke break.
This is on the fountain.
Talking
or something
about
else?
A guy who holds down a 9-to-5 job on Pacific Avenue, you know, and they still harassed him.
And you got a citation for what, obstructing an officer?
I'm not sure if he might have heard the radio show and decided it was in his best interest to forget about that, but I'm not sure if he's going to bring it into court to turn it in or not. But
keep an eye on the mail, otherwise a warrant may appear.
Well, I've got a piece of paper that said I wanted to take care of it, but...
Hadn't shown up yet.
Yeah, hopefully...
But it won't show up for a couple of weeks, usually, at least.
Hopefully, if he's washing his own ass, he won't turn it in. Otherwise, we might have to kind of try to fight it.
Well, criminals of your ilk need to be taken care of. Don't you agree, sir?
Yeah.
Oh, don't get me started.
Yeah, guys me that aren't doing anything wrong need to be left alone. That's...
Oh, please. You're obvious. Look at those glasses.
You get me started. So I wanted to say
we're talking with...
My name's Colin Clyde, and I went today and posted a notice up on the front door of one Mr. Ken Cole, executive director of the Homeless Service Center, his office. It's a Sunday, so he's not in the office, but he'll see it tomorrow, and it says no more black mold in the showers. There's been black mold in the showers at the Homeless Service Center for the last 5 years, at least, to my knowledge. And clearly new tile needs to be put in the showers. You know, we keep getting told, you know, one of these days some plumbers or something will show up. That has not happened. There continues to be black mold. It continues to get people sick.
And what kind of vehicle
And I think that the all the good people and organizations out there that have donated money in order for Santa Cruz to have a halfway decent shelter system, and, you know, who have put in time and effort and money, really need to, I don't know, maybe give Ken Cole a call.
458-6020.
And ask him, where exactly is all this money going if we can't even get black mold cleaned out of the showers at all in the last 5 years? So that's a campaign that, you know, I would just really like to see there be more of a democratic democracy in how the homeless shelter system is run, and that's based on the idea that people who live in non-traditional housing scenarios are actually very capable, intelligent people. You have to be to survive in these kind of circumstances, and that those people themselves might actually be a treasure trove of really good ideas about how the structure of the social services it could be run better.
Indeed. Anything else from the streets?
From the streets, let me think.
Heard today that a woman with two children had her partner, Cosmo, spirited away to jail after being reportedly assaulted by the police, but that's still trying to track down that rumor.
I don't really know. I'm aware of that situation going on, but I don't really know enough details to really speak about it in an outward media
sort of.
I'm pretty sure the guy drives around in a really nice vintage Mercedes.
You're talking about Ken Cole, the executive director of the homeless service center.
And when they built the family shelter, all they did to the service center is painted the outside yellow and let the inside rot, basically.
Maybe they should have painted somebody else yellow. Anyway, thank you very much, Greg.
And now I'm going to play a few phone calls I got from Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz activist Donna Dice, who's now homeless or lives in her vehicle with Shane, who we've talked about in the air before. Shane's, a year ago, he got assaulted by his account from Officer Brierley when he was simply trying to help somebody do some parking on Pacific Avenue. Shane is a seriously ill AIDS person. And he then later, there was an incident where, and Lulu Carpenter, Shane, who was sitting on the sidewalk with his bunny Fluffy, got harassed and maligned and threatened by Manafree Srinath, the owner of Lulu Carpenter's, who then filed a false police report alleging he was violating the law by panhandling when he was not. And we did some protests outside Lulu Carpenter's. But Donna is outside. She's a very good writer. She hasn't been doing too much writing lately because she's been struggling to survive. But here's a call we got regarding a problem she and Shane were having regarding an attempt to get dental services. Let's see if we actually have this, get this together here. Let's see. One moment.
Third at 1:41 p.m.
Robert, this is Donna. We're over at Dr. Slaughter's office. They're saying to have 5 teeth pulled, and the clerk is refusing to help him, although he already has an appointment set up through the DNTs, and he's been here before. She's threatening to call the police, which I'm not afraid of the police, because I don't have anything to worry about. You know, it's getting into quite a scene over here. And this is the only oral surgeon that will work on chain. And there's no other oral surgeon. It's a matter of life and death. They don't care. They're just being very rigid and foolish. So if you can publish this, make sure it's the clerk at Terry Slaughter's office in Watsonville on Green Valley Road. Thank you.
Wednesday, May 23rd at 2:19 p.m.
Hi, Robert. Police came, talked to the police. He didn't care. Called the lawyer on prepaid legal, got a reference number. Called DNTs. They're trying to call the Slaughter's office and see if they can talk to this woman who's being a brick wall, and called the Scab, which Shane's on the phone to right now. So it's totally bullshit. He had an appointment. He's been here before. He has an ID and other information to identify him. She just flat out refused to let him have his teeth pulled, even though I told her it was life-threatening and there was no other oral surgeon that could help Jane. And she accused us of threatening her, which is total bullshit. My voice got loud. That doesn't mean I'm threatening. So we're still waiting here in the parking lot to see if Tiente and Scap can do anything because, you know, people don't care when somebody's about to die. They deserve to be rocked to their soul.
End of message. To repeat this... Day, May 23rd at 2:21 p.m.
Robert, this is Donna again. I have some other news. There's a man that was coming out to Tree Lot every day. He had cancer. He was about 100 pounds. He was hassled by Robocop because of where he would park at night. 57 years old. He died 2 days ago. He made art, sculpture, painting, photography, and collected lots. He's been a hermit most of his life. We're going to have a ceremony for him there and at the mouth of the river where he likes to park, or where cops tried to chase him out of. So, just letting you know, one more person that's in our prayers too. Also, night before last, Robocop went all around our van, 4:30 in the morning, pounded on the van, and told him not to answer, and we left. They didn't come back, but they chased everybody out of the parking lot. We were probably the last one. So, seems to be a little shake up in the police department. I think we need an informant in the police department. So now we know these things are coming down. What do you think? And I told you about Joe's story, so couldn't even lay on the bench in the daytime at the beach. I would love to get some traction on this stuff. Thanks. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you. End of message.
And that were a couple of phone messages from Donna Dice, who actually has some more, given us some more recent messages. That's from about a week ago. The man who died was Mike Seymour, or River Mouth Mike, as some people knew him. He had a lengthy obituary in the paper, which I read on Sunday. He's been on this show, and if you Google for Mike Seymour, or if you do a search function for Mike Seymour, when you pull up the Huff website, Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, www.huffsantacruz.org, and go to the section where these shows, the name of the show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadside, and I've been doing this show now for about 12 years, but only about the last 2 or 3 years are archived now. But Seymour has given interviews in the past, and you can probably find those interviews if you're interested in hearing what Mike had to say. For those of you who knew him, he was outspoken, he was angry, he defended his rights, and he apparently died here. And I wasn't at the service. I didn't know when it was. I learned later it was last Friday, I believe. But that was that for Mike. What you heard the description of was Donna's talking about trying to get medical services for her partner, Shane, who's... because of his fragile condition with respect to AIDS, is seriously in danger when he has teeth that need to be pulled. And, I'm guessing, but that sounds real. And who's being blocked by a bureaucrat in the office and not getting help from the SCAP, Santa Cruz AIDS Project, or the police, or other people that should be helpful in this situation. I don't know all the details, and one has to, of course, when this, we only hear one side of this whole story. But I think it's useful to hear what we're hearing. You know, I mean, we don't know Dr. Slaughter, Terry Slaughter, I believe the name is, if I heard it properly, his side yet. But the idea of trying to, you know, make an issue of something when some basic right is being denied, because apparently, if we understand it properly, Shane was a client, paid, you know, the doctors paid by the state, the appointment had been made and so forth, and he was being denied access because of a conflict with some administrative person at the front desk. When that kind of problem arises, what do? You come back later and keep trying? Well, for example, I have had that problem in dealing with officials of the court trying to get court records around the sleeping ban. For you regular listeners or for people who listened to the last show, I played a segment of what happened to me last Wednesday, I should say a week ago Wednesday, when I and two other Huff activists went to the window and simply requested access to public records. We didn't ask them to print them out. We didn't ask them to devote any more time than they would in any normal time they'd spend at the window with somebody there. We were told in a letter from the court administrator, Alex Calvo, that if they spend 10 minutes, they have to charge you for it. So we asked for 9.5 minutes. And we asked them to look up as many names as possible because we're looking to get the sleeping ban records. We had the names and we had the dates of the offenses and we had the citation numbers. So we were all ready to roll. And the court administrator, Tess Fitzgerald, refused to serve us and tried to get us to leave and called the deputies, five of them, to demand we leave and claim we were creating a disruption when actually all we were trying to do was to get her to say on record, we won't serve you because that is improper, if not criminal, behavior from court personnel who are charged with giving the public access to public records. I mean, we weren't looking for confidential juvenile records. We weren't looking for, you know, secret domestic records. We were looking for simple records of people charged with infraction crimes that's open to the public. And actually, most of this had all been resolved. We wanted to find out how much people were being charged for the crimes, how much bail they had to pay, how often these went to a failure to appear, how much that added to the whole thing, whether people who were being charged with these failures to appear were informed that they had a right to a jury trial, all kinds of information that the court plays pretty fast and loose with, particularly in the basement court of referee Kim Baskett, and also apparently upstairs in the court of Superior Court Judge Deneen Guy, who is, I mentioned, has a trial tomorrow. Craig Canada has a trial tomorrow before her for 4 sleeping ban citations. It shouldn't be there at all. They should have been dismissed by the Barisoni, the city attorney, because there's no legal place for people to go except for a place for 40 people every night for 1,500 to 2,000 people. That's obviously insufficient. And for Craig Canada, who's a medical marijuana user, they're denying him for that reason alone. He has a condition where he uses medical marijuana for his bipolar condition and some other physical problems he has. So we went to the window on Wednesday, and we played that tape, how they called the deputies and threatened to arrest us. We didn't leave, and we refused to leave until she said to us, all we're asking you to say is, you're not going to serve us. We want you to say those words, because once you say those words, we're out of here. We're documenting the fact that you're refusing us service. She kept refusing to say that, but finally she did. So we went back the next day and tried again, and here is what happened on that day. Now we're down here in the basement of the county building, and Bernard Klissner is about to go up to the far right traffic minor violations window to request what we requested yesterday, records of people charged with sleeping ban violations who went to court or failed to appear. With me also is Valerie Christie, is going to be doing this tape recording, and Bernard Klissner is going to be making the request. I, on the other hand, am just an earnest reporter looking on. It is about 15 to 12, about the same time as yesterday.
I would like to see the records of all these, please. The ones that are under 9.
coming from my head. It's air conditioning.
I tried to punch in this number and nothing came up.
Well.
So let me look again. Possibly it's in here differently than it's on this piece of paper. Okay, I find something for David. 759, no, that's not it. Okay. Try again. P-A-W-L-A-K. We're trying to find this thing that's not coming up on the way it's supposed to be, so it's probably this number 4. Usually what we do is we type in what the people have right here, and it should bring something up. It's not bringing up anything under CS693629, so let's try something else. Just if we drop the C off, S693629. No. Do you know how somebody looked this up for you last time?
So what's...
Do you know how somebody looked this up for you last time?
What's happening here is the clerk is trying to be very helpful, and actually the police department number, apparently they have a C in front of it, but the courts require a P in front of it, so that turned out to be the problem.
Didn't have anything?
No, I'm saying that I can't find any of these. These codes are not the kind of codes we usually look for. I'm looking for things that have like a P, and this has a CS, so I don't really know why I can't find any of this stuff. Let me try again.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know how to help you do that.
Right. It just doesn't, it's not what I'm used to seeing, so that's...
But I do know you have records of all those on that list.
Well, I see Jesse in here. It's probably these. An ongoing issue, and so unless you're actually
Now, what's happening here, and I was kind of turning off the tape recorder because, as you can hear, she makes attempts. She apparently is not too skilled at looking for records because she's given not only the original citation number of the person whose record we're looking for, but the person's name, the date of the offense, the time of the offense. I mean, she has all the information she needs, but she's having some trouble finding it. But she eventually does, and then she informs us of a new rule that has suddenly been created a day later. Previously, and it's always been the case, that when you approach the window and ask for a record, you don't have to be the person on the record. You don't have to be looking for your own record. You can look for any record you want. They're all public records. But now we're suddenly told there's a new rule.
People, I can't give you the case print for it. If you're Jesse or Patricia or Jeremiah or William or Robert, I'll be happy to give you your individual case, but I'm not going to be able to give you these cases. You could submit a written request for a record search, and that costs $15, but as it stands right now, unless you're any of these people listed, I'm not going to be able to give you what it is.
Well, my understanding is that as long as you take the search is under 10 minutes, it's free, and I'm asking to see them. And I don't want to put in no written requests. The law says I have a right to do what I'm doing right now.
Okay, well, I can only do what my supervisor allows me to do, and so since she's aware of this situation, apparently yesterday at noon someone else had the same request, she's asked me to handle it this way.
Well, I don't accept that. May I speak to your supervisor?
Sure. I don't consent to be tape recorded.
And this is Supervisor Tess Fitzgerald, who the day before had called the sheriffs and been very reluctant to say she wasn't going to service, but finally made some such statement after we simply insisted on not leaving the window until she made that statement. She is again refusing to service and trying to avoid saying that. And you also hear her on this occasion refusing to be tape recorded. which of course she has no right to do because she's a public in a public place with no expectation of privacy, and actually she's violating the law and doesn't want a record made of it.
So you'll have to turn that off because I don't consent to be tape recorded. Penal Code 632 says that this is a situation in which I would consent, and I do not consent. Mm-hmm. We talked about this yesterday. The discussion that we had yesterday remains the same.
So you refuse to honor
is
us?
Is that off?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then
Mr.
give
Norris,
me my things.
You,
this
you
is not. I'm not Mr. Norris. I'm Mr. Klitschner.
And you're not any one of these people,
no,
so you're
I'm
asking
not.
For a record search.
Yes, I am.
And I talked to you yesterday about the parameters for a record search. You need to fill out a request, and those are not complied with at the counter. Sorry.
No, that's not the authority that I have. I have an authority saying that if it's under a 10-minute search...
Let me see.
Do you...
Excuse me, Mr.
Let me just, can I mark it for you?
No,
you want to read it?
Let me show you what this says.
I know what it says. I've read it.
This request is being handled as one request and that I need to be contacted to arrange to get the 168 names that you're requesting. That's how we're dealing with this. We're not doing it piecemeal. I've talked to the CEO. That's the man who signed this letter. And indeed, that is his interpretation as well. So, you may want to talk to your lawyer if you don't understand what that letter means. And she'd be happy to explain it to you, I'm sure. But I find that it's rather clear. And I can't do this for you right here.
It says 15 provides for $15 fee for each search taking longer than 10 minutes. Well, we're asking you just to do enough for 10 minutes.
That's not how we're going to do this.
Well, who decides?
The CEO. He's told you here that basically I need to be contacted and we're going to give you an estimate of how long it's going to take to do the 168 names that you presented to us, back that he presented to us, and that's how we're going to do it. We're not going to play this game where you show up at noon every day and clog up my line, okay?
I don't accept what you're saying, Cass.
Okay, well, I don't know what else to tell you because that's how this is going to be, and if I can't get you to leave, then I'm going to have a deputy escort you from the window because you can't be doing it like this.
Well, I don't know why you'd want to call a deputy. Wouldn't it be easier just to give me what I need?
Sir, I'm not going to argue with you about this anymore. This is ridiculous. You've already been dealt with.
Can I speak to your superior, Cass, please?
She's not available.
Why? Well,
she's
put that
lunch.
In writing, please.
No, I will not.
Why not?
Sir, do you want me to call the sheriff? You can either... Our business
that's
concluded.
Not my business
I've explained
whether
to you.
You call the okay. sheriff.
Good to see you again. So we have two deputies down here. How are you doing today? That's good. Let me just... Deputies Brim, and I forget the name of your associate. Who is it?
Deputy Desagna.
Thank you. Was there an incident report made yesterday? Do you know?
You know, I don't know. I wasn't the...
You weren't the deputy.
...one you spoke with.
Okay.
So I don't know about that.
Okay. I would like... If there is an incident report made today, I wish to make a report myself.
Okay. I don't know if there was one made yesterday.
Okay, if there's one being made today, I want to make a report.
I don't believe there is one being made today.
Okay.
I just got down.
I understand.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Sorry for the holdup, folks.
Unfortunately, it appears on this tape that what we've got here is... The key part of the tape is actually missing. Her well, actually, it isn't really missing. Substantively, she refused to serve us, stating that there was a lot of names to go through, and she didn't want the line held up. What we said was all we wanted was 9 minutes of work. As you know, a person coming to the window usually takes from 2 or 3 to 10 minutes per person. I mean, it depends on the person that comes up there. And we had the right to do that. She insisted and said we fill out either a $15 Public Records Act request or pay a huge amount of money to them to do separate work away from the window. We offered them at different times an opportunity to open another window, to pull out some records and hand them to us so we could examine them off to the side, as is the case in other courts looking at microfiched records. The public has the right to look at public records, and it's peculiar that... these records are not available for us to see. Although in a certain sense it's not peculiar because this has been the case for the last 4 years. There's a series of pretexts that have been used by the court or reasons, if in fact they aren't just pretexts, claiming that they, first, that they couldn't access records generally. We wanted to get everybody who was a who had gotten a sleeping ban ticket over a period of months, violated Municipal Code 6.36, the law that makes it illegal to sleep outside, even if you have no place to go, even if the police are violating the Constitution by arresting people who have no place to go and who need to sleep somewhere legally at night. We were told that they didn't have the facility to do it. Then we were told that they did, but it would take too much time. Then we were told it would cost $80, and we said, okay, we'll think about that. Then they suddenly said they couldn't do it again. And then finally, they told us that they wouldn't do it for different reasons. Finally, they said, we'll do it for $15 per case, which would be about $4,500, not counting copying fees, for 300 names or so. And then they said, well, we'll do it to you for $15 per 10-minute interval. And we said, well, you have the obligation to provide us with the records free. You don't have the obligation to print them out for us. I mean, we can, you know, you can charge reasonable copying fees, but you can't keep the records from us, claiming that we have to pay you to look at the records. That's just not part of the code. And I'm surprised that they're continuing to refuse to show us the records, as Ms. Fitzgerald was doing there. The recording is not as full as I'd wish it. I thought it actually had more, but apparently the machine was at some point turned off there. But it does catch the gist of what actually happened, which is that for a second day running, the supervisor of the windows in the basement of the county building refused access by several members of the public who said, we just want you to show us the records for a couple of people. No more than 9.5 minutes worth of work, please, because we know that if you go over that, it would be a charge for your time. And they refused. So the way we dealt with it is we didn't leave, even though they called the deputies, until such time as they said that they wouldn't serve us. Now, unfortunately, there's a segment of the tape which you can't hear. It actually wasn't tape, but a segment of what happened, where the deputy turned to Tess Fitzgerald and said, I kept saying, please say that, you know, you're not going to serve us and we'll leave the window. And she said, Mr. North, I don't have to say anything to you. I'd like you to leave. And I said, well, does that mean you're not going to serve us? I kept repeating that. And she finally, the deputy turned to her and said, tell him you're not going to serve. And she said, I'm not going to serve you, apparently kind of embarrassed by the fact that she was refusing to do something obvious that would end the whole thing and let us all go back to our business. And she did say that. That part, unfortunately, is not preserved on tape, or if it is, it's preserved on a deputy's tape. So the next step we talked about doing would be to file a citizen's arrest of Tess Fitzgerald. And why would that be? Well, it wouldn't just be for refusing to make the records available, though that's the key issue. It's rather for calling the deputies and trying to intimidate us away from the window rather than allowing us access to public records. She not only, what she did in essence was she filed a police report. She created a disturbance by refusing to give us access to records. And then when we said, look, we're going to be here, you know, until you make it really clear what's going on and saying you're not going to serve us, she insisted instead on calling deputies. And so she filed a false police report. We talked about that whole issue earlier about filing a false police report when you are claiming one thing because you're an official who can sort of, I'm calling the police on you. Officials have to be careful when they do that. They have to have a legitimate reason to do that, because if they don't and the police show up, then they have some liability. And the question is, how much liability? Well, you got to get an attorney and so forth. And that's a whole rigmarole and hassle that we're going to have to go through at some point, or not. But if we put it on the record, there's more chance that these public officials will behave next time. Again, tomorrow at 1:30, Craig Canada will be going to trial in on Department 1 in the county courthouse. Check it out. I encourage you to take a look at that. Also, what else have we here? I'm kind of rolling out of here now because we have to wind this up. Going to be playing some more of the Hilda Whitehead Memorial tape for those of you who remember her. She died last month, and there were some very eloquent testimonies about her life, and that some of that we played last Sunday. It's going to be played again, the rest of it, that is, during Thomas Levitt's show. And we'll also be covering a number of other subjects. We may be playing some of the Downtown Commission tapes, assuming that they reappear. A little hard to find them right now, where the Downtown Commission, to its credit, decided they were going to they weren't going to recommend that they dump the parking garage paranoia law, which is currently in place, but at least they weren't going to expand it to all the parking lots, although the city council could move instead and do what it wants. So see you next Sunday, and in the meantime, tune in to Free Radio and keep your ear open, your ears open, and keep your eyes open as well, and give us reports as to what's going on the streets, because that's the only way we know what's going on. I only get a very small segment of the bit of the picture. I'll be back at 9:30, probably a bit before, on Sunday morning, maybe joining Thomas Levitt on the wake-up call. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
Rising off the Texas plain, sit and watch the sky, but the clouds all pass me by. I'm here in Austin, waiting on that rain, waiting on that Austin city rain. There ain't a cloud up in the sky. We said our goodbyes, so I still wonder why I'm here in Austin, waiting on that rain. Well, I grab another taco, phone down another Joe. Siesta time, time to find some shade. I'm lost in Austin, got no place left to go. I'm here in Austin, waiting on that rain, waiting on that Austin city rain. A cloud up in the sky. We said our goodbyes, so I still wonder why I'm here in Austin, waiting on that rain. Another sunset in the dusty west, from La Cantina, house of purple sage. The beer is warm here, but at least it's mostly wet. I'm still in Austin, still waiting on that rain, waiting on that Austin city rain. There ain't a cloud up in the sky. Said our goodbyes, so I still wonder why I'm here in Austin, waiting on that rain. Yeah, we said our goodbyes, but it's too damn dry to cry. I'm here in Austin, waiting on that rain.
song Dickie Betts wrote for my second album, in memory of Elizabeth Reed.